720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Why, do you ask, are we playing music from Jaws and sitting here saying things to ourselves like, we're going to need a bigger boat? The reason is because we have our new friend Chris Bresky in studio with us, who is, I've never seen your business card, Chris, but I'm only guessing it's a lengthy business card because you got to fit author, illustrator, actor, science educator, shark activist, all kinds of things on there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You have created a book that is in front of me right now, and it is so darn cute. It is called The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. You may go to the 12 days of a great white christmas.com. I'll tweet this out and put it on the WGN radio site after the broadcast. And you too may see how darn adorable this book is. It's so cute. And it's all about, if you poke around the website a little bit, there's a button that says Meet the Creator, and it will take you to a YouTube video in which, Chris, you're drawing on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And the first thing is like, hi, I'm Chris. The second thing is, I love sharks. And then I love Christmas. And then there's Christmas and like a Christmas tree and a shark together. And it doesn't sound like a combination would work, but it works surprisingly well.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it surprised me.
Tell me how the shark thing started.
That's a great question. Well, my wife, Mariah, she one year asked for me to draw us a Christmas card. You know, the holidays can be a stressful time. And so she's like, make me something that will make me laugh and make everybody else I know laugh. And I drew us sleeping under a Christmas tree with a dream bubble and Santa going across the sky. And he was quite perplexed because he was being pursued by a great white shark. And the tagline was, of course, like, we're dreaming of a great white Christmas.
Sure.
And every single year it sort of like spiraled downward or
upward,
upward or outward, inward, exactly. Until it turned into this. It's a play on the word white Christmas, and you know, puns are plays on words. And my mother said my grandfather would always say puns are the disease of an addled mind. And there's got to be a little something wrong with you when you're smashing together Christmas and sharks. But it's what makes it funny, I think.
And I love the front of it. It says, not written by, illustrated by. It says, Words and Sharks by Chris Bresky. It's adorable, but it's set up like the classic 12 Days of Christmas.
Yeah, right.
And so we have like two tiger sharks and a great white where a partridge ought to be.
Yeah.
Adorable.
They're all trying to fumble their way through Christmas.
Hammerheads. It's super cute.
In the world of Sharknado and the world of sharks are huge, but they're often depicted as like, you know, fierce, terrifying, not as terrifying as a space heater.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Earlier in the program, I confessed to having a fear of space heaters, and I have found my people because people were texting saying, I feel you, sister. Thank you.
Right. But so these aren't sharks to be afraid of. They're sharks to laugh with.
And so this is where your science educator piece comes in.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to, you're doing good PR for sharks because they have a bad rap. Thanks, Jaws.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's true because every single one of us that saw Jaws in our youth.
Terrified.
There's no body of water that you get in after that without like, there's some creature.
I'm educating some teens and they ask me if they are, you know, sharks in the lake. And as an educator, that's where I step in. There's a teachable moment there.
Yeah, there is. So sharks really just started from that card, or did you always have the love of sharks?
I always had a love of animals and all things water based. I'm a water rat myself. Like, I grew up on the West Coast and I love to surf and I love, so I think that just so sort of evolved. And I think also they're sort of the dinosaurs of the ocean. Right. You know, some sharks go back 80 million years. I love dinosaurs.
I'm writing that down. Dinosaurs of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that very much.
Yeah.
And then so as you made this project come to life, the 12 Days of a Great White Christmas, which you can go to the12daysofagreatwhitechristmas.com,
mm-hmm.
and you can find out about the book. As you were putting all that together, you did some crowdfunding.
This is true. Yeah.
And which is I've been through a crowdfunding campaign, and it's a harrowing and fascinating and delightful experience.
Right, all of the above.
It's all of those things.
It really is.
I think it's good for you, all of us, mm-hmm. royal you, to do because it makes you refine your idea because you have to talk about it so much.
This is absolutely true.
And then you're accountable to however many hundreds of people back you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you're just barren. You're like, here I am. I can fall on my face in front of everybody. Please don't let me.
Yeah. So you did a crowdfunding to produce this book.
Yeah. And it was really wonderful. Shark Week, the Discovery Channel Shark Week got wind of it and tweeted about us and actually got us past our goal. We were like 125% funded, much to them, which is really lovely. Actually, Shark Week is doing a thing where we're allowed to take over their Instagram for 12 days.
And that's happening right now.
It's happening right now. I think we're on day 6 or 7 right now. So yeah, if you go to Shark Week's Instagram, you can check it out there too.
You're running their Instagram right now.
It's a lot of pressure.
I don't want to put more pressure on you, but last year at Shark Week, producer Craig and I were hanging out right here as we are now, and we noticed that many bars in the Chicago area had a special cocktail for
Ooh.
Shark Week.
Wow.
So we had bartenders bring them to us. And as a result, one of them put a rubber shark in a cocktail, and it's in this building. It's here. It's in that studio.
Yeah, the shark is somewhere in the room I'm in.
I would like to take a photo with it if I
can
find
it. Cool.
So I don't want to pressure you about the Instagram that you're doing, but I'm just saying there's a shark in the room right now.
You could totally share it. It'd be totally fine. No big deal.
You can totally tag us on Instagram. We will totally not be mad.
Exactly. There it is.
Just letting you know. And so what kinds of things are you putting on the Discovery Channel Shark Week Instagram right now?
Right, so you get little bits, little nuggets from the book. Some
Adorable.
Of them you see the hammerheads, you see the tiger sharks toppling over a Christmas tree while they're trying to trim it, and then you get to see some of the shark facts from the fact page. You have dinosaur, you have a frilled shark, which is like 80 million years back. It's been around. I don't know if you've seen them. They're really interesting. But they're basically living frilled.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta find it.
They're caroling off key. They're caroling off key.
The goblin shark.
Yeah.
The what? How do you say that?
Wobbegongs.
Yeah, it looks like a pancake batter situation.
You look like they melted.
There's the rubber shark right there. Craig found it.
Yes.
The angel shark.
Fantastic.
The frilled shark.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. I've seen these before. I've seen these at the aquarium.
So that's
they look very dinosaurish.
So, like you said, I'm an educator as well. So there's the back of it. For those of you who want to give it to your friends who know so much about sharks, but you can quiz them on the back or educate your nephew or niece on sharks.
These are so cute.
The back few pages. Yeah, those are ghost sharks. So you have like the ghost shark of Jacob Marley going after Scrooge.
The sleeping ones. That's
these
cute.
Are sleeper sharks.
That's a real thing.
They're in the in Greenland has one.
Okay.
They've found reindeer inside of them that can get really big. Really big. And
whale
really old.
Shark.
They
Look
just recently
thing.
Found that it can be like over 200 years old.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to say that with complete confidence because that's right. Old.
I am getting my horizons expanded left and right this evening
because
we learned about megalophobia from Betsy who called. And what was the name of the other phobia? I wrote it down. I can't read my own writing.
Yeah, no, I can't remember.
Try something phobia. Anyway, that
tripophobia.
One, that's what it was.
Yeah,
tripophobia. Learned about that one, and now I've learned about sharks that live 200 years.
Yeah, this is true. And so, they get speaking about fear of big things. They can get bigger than a great white shark too. Green sleeper sharks. Sleeper sharks. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See, we're learning so many things, my friends. We are hanging out with Chris Bresky, the author and illustrator and shark creator of the 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. You can go to that website. It is the12daysofagreatwhitechristmas.com, and you can see this book. It is so cute. If you have a child in your life and you need a book for their holiday gift, this is a good one. It's so, so cute, and it's educational. It's all about sharks. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about sharks and about your aquatic activism and science spreading that you're doing.
I'm looking forward to it.
All good. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. I have no idea what we're listening to right now. But there are two grown men dancing to it in front of my eyes. Amy Guth, in for Patty Vasquez. And I don't know what's happening with this song, but we are hanging out. Craig, what is that? What is that from?
That is Baby Shark doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Oh, it's so weird. I was wondering. Yeah, it's catchy.
You were hoping for that song.
My Lord.
I went onto YouTube and I looked for shark songs, and this has 45 million views.
I see why.
Baby Shark Dance.
Clearly.
So, yeah, it was pretty good. And I liked how the voices, like, Kid Shark had its own, and then Dad Shark
Daddy
sounded...
Daddy Shark had one.
Yeah. Play this song all night. This is the bump for the rest of the evening.
I was going to say, please do. I'm going to text you about 3:30 in the morning, Craig, and be like, I still had that song in my head.
No, you cut it off. Grandma Shark was coming up. There were so many more.
That's as I do.
Later.
Well, but I want to get back to the conversation with our guest, Chris Bresky, who is the author and illustrator behind The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas, combining his two loves, Christmas and sharks. They do not sound like they would go together, but in fact, they go together wonderfully and beautifully. This book is so cute. I'm so charmed by this book. And it's like, you know, the setup of like the 12 Days of Christmas and the Partridge in a Pear Tree and all that good stuff. But it's done with sharks. And it is adorable and educational all at the same time. So young people in your lives and not so young people.
Shark lovers of all ages.
Shark lovers of all ages. That's a fine line that you have there at the ready. can enjoy this book. And I recommend that you do. As you, as this project has gone along, Chris, a lot of institutions have gotten behind you on it, which has got to be wonderful. It's a great feeling.
It is a wonderful feeling. I was able to share it with the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago, and we sold out last year, and it was I was able to come in and get a talk to some of the experts, and it was exciting to have to go back and forth because I thought I knew a lot about sharks, but then doing this process, one thing about doing the 12 Days of a Great White Christmas is that you are then getting to know 12 sharks very well.
Sure.
And so getting to work with these institutions that support them was, yeah, like you said, it was quite heartening.
That's really great. I mean, the list, I'm sitting here looking at a list of some of the institutions, the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, the National Aquarium of Maryland, the LA Natural History Museum, the Georgia Aquarium.
Yeah.
Not small things here. No. These are wonderful.
No, I'm very humbled by how well it's been received. It's a fun and wacky idea, and it's exciting when something zany is embraced.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's why it works well, right? Because you, just talking with you, you can tell you're not kidding when you say, I love sharks. I love Christmas. I'm putting them together. This is what
matter.
We're going to do.
No, it's not
right?
A joking matter.
I think when you put your passion at the forefront, it shows and it becomes contagious. I think people connect to it. Even if sharks and Christmas aren't necessarily their two favorite things, they're like, that guy really means it. He's really into
there's
this.
There's something about the enthusiasm, I think, that sells it. People say that there's a bit about that, and I try to put that into my work. Like,
yeah.
Just like these sharks, they're going all at it with Christmas, and they're really trying their hardest. And some of them failing miserably, but still, just
they're
like we
so
all
cute.
Do, you know, still just like doing their darndest. Can I do one funny anecdote?
Of course you can.
Kid just, a friend of mine contacted me about his son was hearing for the very first time the original 12 Days of Christmas. I almost said Great White. 12 Days of Christmas, some quarrelers, am I saying that right?
Carolers,
thank
That's
you.
One.
we're singing it, and he was like, Daddy, why no wobbegongs? Why are they not singing the wobbegong song? He had learned the Great White Christmas song before he had ever heard the original. And it broke my heart into a billion little pieces of joy. I mean, the fact that this could, and is, I've seen, like, people send me photos of it, this becoming this fun, silly tradition, is kind of why I'm realizing why I did it, just to make people smile.
I love that this little boy is like, no, the standard edition here is about sharks.
Yeah, what's this remix?
Get it together. Your version is stripped down, and I am not having it.
I haven't seen a Lord of Leaping. I have seen a Great White Shark, though.
See?
Yeah.
Real. We're talking with Chris Bresky, who is the author and illustrator behind The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. When we come back, we are going to keep this conversation rolling because there are many, many fascinating pieces to this, including there's a bit of an activist and educator piece to this, and I want to talk about what's on the horizon for sharks when we continue this conversation on 720 WGN.
Grandma Shark.
You're both singing along with the shark song now. You went from dancing to singing along with it. I don't mean to be curmudgeonly. Maybe I should just get up and dance to the shark song too. 720 WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. And this shark thing that we're doing now is all caused by our guest, Chris Bresky's here with us, the author and illustrator behind The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. It combines sharks and Christmas, and it is super cute, and it is so cute, and I love it, and it's you've done so many interesting things with this project, Chris. I love how institutions have gotten behind this and have gotten you involved in their programming. And I think that's so lovely, you know, right here in our backyard with a shed and all of that. I think that's really lovely. I'm curious now, as you're doing all of this work in the science education realm that really pushes into activism, it seems like, you know, what is the next piece of that? How do you... You know, you're running Shark Week's Instagram right now. You're doing all these things. You're kind of the shark guy. So what, you know, what is the next piece of this? Is there a more pronounced activist part of it coming, or are you just going to see what happens?
That's a great question. I am the proud parent of a 5-month-old, and she has, I have become a big proponent of her these days.
I would hope.
Yes. And she is, she has been a large focus, but but for the book in the future, I am, really encouraged by these educational institutions, picking it up and, understanding what I'm trying to do with it. I hope to be able to, give back to, organizations that are, promoting, you know, reef rehabilitation and are working to bring back different shark species on the and just ocean life in general. That's hurting,
sure,
and in need of both awareness as well as support. Yeah, it's a desire of mine, absolutely, as an educator too, to educate public who might not have even thought about sharks or may not even or just are scared of them and so didn't even think to worry about their environment or their habitat. So that's down the line, absolutely. And kind of all of the art that I truly wish to make, I want it to, I think, like Jim Henson once said, I want to leave the world a little better of a place than when I got here. And that's definitely my desire as an artist as well.
I love that. That's so lovely. And as you go through all of the shark things that you're doing, I'm trying to think where all the places where, you know, where do we encounter sharks? Where do we think about them outside of aquariums, right? Where are we?
Oh, sure.
And I'm thinking in my own life, here are my two shark encounters for you. One, I was in, this was years ago, I was in Mexico and a little baby shark just kind of swam up to me and I was like, hey, but you know, back of my head is like, well, there's a mama. So I should go. So I pet him. I mean, he let me kind of pet him, which was cool.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of maybe my first shark.
Was that terrifying for you?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Because that was sort of my first shark horizon expanding.
Sure.
So in February and March, I was in South Africa.
Okay.
And I was like, I saw there were ads everywhere for shark cages in Cape Town. And I was like, that's a thing I've. And I came really close to doing it. And that particular day, the water was too cold. And they're like, the sharks are not going to, they're not going to hang. They're not going to do it.
Oh, I thought they, okay. Wow.
I thought they liked cold water.
I was about to say the same thing.
But no, guess
too
not.
Too cold.
Too cold for the sharks. Mm. So they were like, sorry, sharks aren't feeling it today.
Wow.
But I was willing. Let the record show I was willing.
No, it's on there.
You pet a baby shark and you wanted to get in a shark cage and you're afraid of space heaters?
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that back. Yeah, we were all thinking it. We're all thinking it.
That's amazing.
Shark Craig.
I think it was irrational fears, I think.
I would not have been so friendly with a baby shark. That would have been terrifying.
Yeah? Have you always been terrified by baby animals?
No, not all baby animals. Violent, scary baby animals, yes. Baby tigers still scary.
See, true.
Oh my gosh, baby tigers are so cute.
Come on. They would take your hand off and look at you.
This shark didn't look dangerous. Which I know would be a very stupid thing to say if it would have gobbled me up. Like, well, it didn't look dangerous. I don't know why it chewed my arm off. But it didn't, I mean, he didn't seem agitated.
How baby are you talking? Like a tiny little, like you could have picked him up if he attacked you
with
kind
your
of
hands,
thing?
You were saying like 3
yeah,
feet?
Yeah, you're holding like a football, Craig.
Okay.
No, yeah, like.
Like 3 feet or so?
Yeah, like 3 feet or so.
I would have been petrified. That's
Wow.
Yeah.
I was more unnerved by being in open ocean like that. There's something a little bit, I don't know, almost the word claustrophobic, but it's not that. Mm. You're aware that, okay, there's nothing behind my back until the next continent, thousands of miles that way.
Yeah.
It's both claustrophobic and agoraphobic at the same time, because you're like, I'm in this ocean. It's a lot.
I think you said, too, something we're conditioned to think, okay, that's baby. Where's the mama? Where's bigger animal? Yeah, where's mama? Where's parent? Yeah.
Because that's a totally reasonable thing. Anyone who's ever watched a cartoon knows that's how that happens. The little cute thing, and then the parent one comes up and clobbers the...
Not so cute thing, yeah.
You know, unwitting
right.
thing. That's how this goes. But I, after the shark encounter that did not happen in South Africa, to turn the shark thing about me, I'm just like excited about sharks right now.
Oh, please.
But your shark enthusiasm is contagious. Okay. There are many Instagram accounts that are like live feeds of inside of shark cages. And I think that is delightful.
That is delightful. And you are opening up my horizons to that as well. I am unaware.
Craig, I taught the shark guy some things about sharks.
Oh my gosh, horizons are opening this evening. What? Wow. Okay, that's exciting.
So it's like they have the camera in the back of the shark cage. So you see the people's heads and arms.
Yeah.
And then the shark. And it looks really cool. Sometimes they look a little like they kind of have to rile the shark up. So I feel a little iffy
right.
about that.
Right.
Because I think anytime there's tourism with animals involved, you got to question it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of conversation lately about like elephants in tourism. Like people are like, if you're
right.
somewhere around the world and you see like an elephant ride situation, that elephant might be being abused. You don't know. So don't do that.
I know there's some questioning with the feeding of whale sharks as well to get them to rise to the surface and for tourism as well. And
Tell me about that. Is there a questionable method?
No, just any time that you're toying with the feeding cycles of any animal, you're gonna have a chance of throwing off their normal migration and their eating patterns. And so it's not nature. It's if man gets in the way, something.
We get in the way of a lot of things. I don't know if you've been watching the news for the last 2 months. We get in the way of many things.
Yeah.
It's a thing we do as humans.
I know.
It's a thing. It's a thing we're real good at.
Real good. I think in that spirit, that's where I try to throw a little sharks and Christmas into the mix to maybe make some people smile in the midst of all the things that we're getting in the way of.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally endorse that. And so is there another book in you? I think I saw somewhere on social media there was like another book idea happening.
There is. Yeah. These are less carnivorous creatures. They're still carnivorous, but less. They wouldn't frighten you nearly as much. That's a book about otters. About a baby otter. Actually.
It depends on the otter.
You're right. It's a baby though. So the baby animal. I don't know if you're still gonna be frightened of it, but it's baby.
He's gonna keep on that, Craig.
He's gonna
keep on that about you and baby.
I got
animals.
One nugget. I'm just gonna, about a baby otter that can't go to sleep. Yeah, baby otters when they're born, they're so fluffy that they can't. I have a hard time like not smiling when I'm thinking about a baby otter. they can't swim. They bob like a cork, and so their mom has to drag them around the water. And so this is about a very precocious young baby otter that like wants to do things on their own way.
You are really when you write a book, it's always like, where am I going to do readings and signings? I feel like you are locking that down
right.
for all the aquariums. You're like locked in.
I just got to know where I am. Yeah.
With the aquarium. Because what's next? Seahorses, maybe? That's a good one.
There's another shark one, actually.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Is it also tied to a holiday?
It's no, it's not. It's for every holiday.
Every day,
yeah.
This is delightful. All right. We have the little plastic shark from last year. I can't believe that shark has been sitting here for a year. But that just goes to show you that we have been showing our devotion for sharks.
I know.
For a year.
And they were bringing shark-inspired cocktails to you here on...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I came a year late.
I don't think it, like, makes for a good listening experience when... But it's nice when, we have chefs or mixologists
sure.
or something come in. They'll usually very generously bring us things to taste
wow.
and talk about. But I've got to think that makes for a terrible listening experience, listening to me chew or drink or something.
That's a tough... When I was listening to you having irrational fears, it's not irrational fear, but that's one that makes something in my body get really angry is that...
The chewing rage?
Yeah.
I have that too.
Chewing rage. I actually never
There is a name
put
for that.
Way.
There's like a clinical name for the chewing rage.
Oh,
but
okay. I'm being diagnosed here tonight because I have it in spades.
Yeah. I get embarrassed by how much chewing rage I have.
Oh, I had a hard time coming clean with it right now, but the fact that you allowed, this is a safe space. It feels like
it's a safe space. Craig, do you have chewing rage?
Oh, I for sure have chewing rage all the time.
Like, it's a weird thing because you're like, I really like the person I'm sitting here with, but you're chewing so loudly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the reason why is because it's such an easy thing to not do. You just close your mouth and the noises don't happen.
True, but that's a slippery slope because you can apply that to many things.
Can't you, though?
Like being a jerk.
So easy
easy to not be a jerk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So easy to not be that guy.
And yet.
And here we are. But it makes for excellent radio fodder when we get to talk about people being a jerk. Also excellent radio fodder, sharks, my friends. So go to the12daysofagreatwhitechristmas.com. Mm-hmm. And there's more to this because if you enter the code WGN when ordering, you get $5 off your order. That's pretty awesome, right? So that is from now until the December 18th.
Yeah,
okay, so
Sunday.
All week. It's not just a tonight thing, but it's a, all week thing.
Let's make this WGN Shark Week.
I love that. WGN Shark Week happening right now. If you would like a copy of this wonderful book, it is so cute, go to the12daysofagreatwhitechristmas.com. This lovely book that it was written and illustrated by our new friend Chris Bresky. And if you, like I said, enter promo code WGN and you're going to get $5 off that book. That's a heck of a deal. And the website is darn cute. And it's my two favorite colors.
For real.
Which makes it cuter. There it is.
There it is.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with
us
tonight.
It has been such a pleasure.
And we will make sure that the link to your site is on the WGN Radio website, and then I'll tweet it out later. So all of you listening can certainly go there and visit it if you didn't get a chance to write that down. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, more of this fun on 720 WGN.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. I think I'm sort of getting trolled with that song right now. I think producer Craig is giving me a little bit of grief because I have, in the last segment, it came up that I have sort of an irrational fear of space heaters. I use them, but then I unplug them because I'm afraid that something will happen. But here's the thing. There are lots of irrational fears. We all have them. Everybody's got something. But then there are some that I think we are... I'm about to say something really controversial, Craig. People are going to be mad.
Okay, wait. Okay. I'm ready? All right, go ahead.
I think that sometimes we are socialized to believe that we are afraid or have contempt for something that in fact we are not afraid of or do not have, for which we do not have contempt.
I think I'm afraid of whatever it is you're going to say, but I'm not sure I'm afraid of it, so continue.
Let me give you an example to make this very clear.
Yes.
Clowns.
I'm afraid of clowns? That's a question.
Lots of people think they are.
Yeah.
And some people legitimately are, and I honor, validate, recognize, and see that. However, I think people now even just go, oh, that's a creepy clown. Not all clowns are creepy. Like, I don't... When the ones that were, like, showing up in England, just hanging out in a neighborhood in the middle of the night, that's unnerving. But that would also be unnerving if like, I was doing that, right? Like anybody just standing there in the dark in the middle of the night, that would be unnerving. But I just want to float the idea to you that maybe we believe we are afraid of clowns when maybe we're not. I'm not afraid of clowns. I don't love them. I don't have like clowns hanging in my house.
Yeah, it's not like I'm a big fan of clowns.
But I'm not scared of them. And I think people are like, oh, I have a totally irrational fear of clowns. I'm like, I don't know if you do.
Oh my God, I do too.
I think that you, right. And I heard someone recently say that she had bonded with someone else over their irrational fear of clowns. And I'm like, really? Because I've known you both over a decade and you've never mentioned that until right this minute. And if it's as, life, what's the word I want, Craig? If it's as life ruling
right.
as you make it sound.
Well, I don't know if I have chlorophobia, but it could.
Chlorophobia is the...
I just tried to work that in all casual, like, right. It's C-O-U-L-R-O phobia.
That's the clinical
definition. Yeah, that's being afraid of clowns.
which is a real thing.
Apparently.
I'm not saying no one is.
I'm just saying it is.
I think a lot of people just sort of jump on that. Mm-hmm. Much like, oh boy, getting into it right now. Much like how people say OCD and PTSD in joking ways, right? That really kind
right.
of, you know, maligns people who do legitimately suffer from it.
Yep.
So, for example, when people say things like, oh, I, you know, like if they're talking about, I don't know, somewhere they used to work or someone they used to date or somewhere they used to live with a bad neighbor, whatever, they'll say they have PTSD about it. When it's like, well, you know, guys, my dad's a combat veteran and that's a legitimate thing that's
right.
really a real thing. And I'm not saying we can't make jokes. I'm all about the jokes. But,
no,
like,
but
that one is...
That, there's things you don't get.
There's things you don't go to. And I think that's one of those things, like, there's already enough mystery around it. To joke about it only kind of clouds it more. I think OCD is one of those things, too. When you really, really what we're saying when we say that is, like, I'm particular about something. But people, like, it's common and popular to say, oh, I'm totally OCD about where I put my car keys. Like, no, I put them on, I put my car keys in the same place every night so I can find them. That doesn't mean that I have obsessive compulsive disorder. That's my PSA for the night.
No, I like that.
I don't think
I agree with all the things
the
you said.
The only one for the night.
Let's do more.
I'm full of PSAs.
I want to do a whole one about chlorophobia. I still am not sure if I'm saying that right. Chlorophobia.
There's like
cleanse.
That pronouncer.
I'm going to find it. I'm going to look that up.
There's this great site. It's like you Google a word and pronunciation, and it'll send you to a little video and pronounce it for you. Hi, Tom. You're on WGN. How's it going?
Yeah. So who is Amy Guth, the business reporter at noon or the radio psychologist at midnight?
And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, talking about all the social issues, all the things. How are you, Tom?
There are wonderful space heaters that are oil-filled and sealed. $40.
Oil-filled?
Yeah, oil-filled. They're yeah. sealed, oil-filled units. It still uses a decent amount of electricity, but you're not going to burn anything down. You can keep them on 24/7 if you want. And the I'm using one in a master bedroom that's probably a couple hundred square feet, and it does a lovely job.
Okay.
So there is your irrational, rational answer, I think.
I appreciate that. Although I got to say, when you said oil-filled, like to me that sounds like something very flammable.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, it's just the next time you're at Walgreens or Best Buy or okay. Walmart or at just ask. To find them and read the box, and you'll feel better about it.
And
but
I'll
my wife is pretty nervous about things like that, and she's perfectly fine with this piece of whatever we want to call
Tom,
it.
Tom said oil filled, anyway. And I heard oil spilled. So I was just thinking right there.
You went right
flammable,
to the
danger. Yeah.
Okay.
Horrible
well,
situation.
No.
Right.
Sealed, totally sealed unit. You'd have to use a pickaxe to get it to leak.
You'd have to really mean it if you wanted it to burn.
Well, if you're having one of those irrational clown moments.
No doubt, right? We've all got that thing. Well, thank you. I appreciate you giving me this information. Next time I'm at the store, I'm definitely going to check out the oil-filled space heater, and I'm going to think of you. And I'll be like, you know what? Tom was right. This is completely safe. That's what I'm going to think.
You're welcome, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm thanking you. In my long-winded way, I'm thanking you.
Right. I've listened to you enough, and I'm pleased to talk with you. I think we could probably have this kind of back and forth for more than a few minutes if we were both with our screws tightened down a bit.
Tom, you're cracking me up. Well, maybe you become like a regular. You like call regularly. Call in all the time. I'm on Saturday nights, Saturday day. You know the drill. Call and say hi again.
Well, and I will tell your producer, whoever answers the phone, just tell him it's oil-filled space heater Tom. And
and that'll be like your passcode. It'll be good.
Take care.
Excellent. Thanks very much for the call, Tom. Nice talking with you. Martier, did you say...
The low tonight is going to be below zero.
Yeah, so that seems early.
Yeah.
It seems like we usually don't hit that till like January.
But let me know. I mean, do you guys feel the same way? Because we were enjoying such a nice fall, you know, an extended warm period. And then all of a sudden it seemed like we just dropped off. We went from 40 to this.
Yes.
Is that just me or is everyone else feeling that way as well?
I'm with you on that. And it seems like there was a day that it was like 73 right before... towards the end of that period of nice and 40s in the fall. Yeah, no. No. You know, but again, I'm trying very hard to just embrace winter and go with it. And in fact, have even challenged myself to try to find the positives. Those are not going to be obvious every day because sometimes it's really hard to find the positives when it's really, really cold. But you know what? I think we can all challenge ourselves to do that on some level. And it's very, very cold in the studios right now, especially back in the offices here at WGN. And so, you know, people have been running around bundled up, and there was a little conversation about space heaters earlier, just because it's kind of chilly back there. We've got a lot of windows in those offices. And this conversation about space heaters kind of sparked some thinking, because my initial reaction to space heaters is that they're inherently dangerous and they will burn down your house.
Right. And you feel that way because?
Because my house burned when I was a kid.
Oh, so a space heater caused the...
It was not caused by a space heater.
Okay.
It was caused because a pine log was thrown in with our firewood. We had a fire going. And
right.
A pine log sparked, you know.
Wow.
And it got an ember hit the roof.
What are your feelings about pine logs?
See, that's the thing. Fireplaces are awesome.
Okay.
They don't freak me out.
That seems
bonfires,
to not make sense.
Campfires, none of that. That doesn't bother me. But space heaters feel like a little death trap.
Without being insensitive to anyone that may have been attacked by like a tiger or something, it would be like being attacked by a tiger and then fearing squirrels.
I know.
Right? Like that's
I recognize that what I'm saying does not totally land.
Right. I lived in a basement apartment a few years ago, and we didn't have good windows. They leaked a lot of that cold air.
And so, a subterranean apartment's always kind of cool.
Yeah, not great. So the management team gave us 3 space heaters to just run all the time.
Death trap. It's a death trap.
I did feel that way every time I left, because you couldn't really turn them off or the apartment would feel like you were outside. So we left them on a lot, even when we weren't necessarily there. And all I was told is that apartment was probably going to be on fire soon.
You left space heaters, plural, running?
3.
While you were not home for
Correct.
Extended stretches.
They were like, they went on and off and
that
stuff.
That is my nightmare.
I know.
That's so scary to me.
I was very afraid of doing it.
Craig, I forgot to, I do have a space heater because my bedroom, I'm on the top floor of my building, and my bedroom does not have the best insulation, so it's a little bit chilly on some very cold nights. And so I have a little heater that I'll run in there for a few minutes before I go to bed. Like while I'm in there brushing my teeth, I'll get the heater going so the bedroom is warm. But I turned it off but forgot to unplug it the other night and was like, oh man, I left it plugged in.
It could dangerously turn on.
It could magically
no.
spark. It's totally irrational.
I let them run for 3-4 months uninterrupted.
Wow.
3 of them.
But you've got to have some comparable irrational fear.
Oh something. Yeah, I have. Well, I'm very afraid of the world. I'm afraid of natural disasters or
okay.
even ones that, and I feel like they would target me. If they could.
They
like
would
yeah,
target
like,
you.
Like sinkholes is something I've talked about before on this show. They seem very scary. That you
sinkholes
don't,
seem very scary.
Right. You can't really predict them. They're underground. I can't know that they're going to be there. And then all of a sudden they could get me.
My brother is a geologist and he's afraid of sinkholes as well.
See? Okay. This
he's
makes
like,
me feel better.
Because they're a little, you
right.
know, they're freaky. He's also fascinated by them because of his profession. But he's like, no, that's pretty freaky. But I think there's a lot of irrational fears. Like, we all have something. We can confess that. If you feel like giving us a call, 312-981-7200. If you feel like confessing an irrational fear, we've all got one. Mine's space heaters. There you have it. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez this fine evening with you till 2 o'clock. You know, we've been talking about fears in particular. You know, I admit I have an irrational fear of space heaters. Our new friend Tom was nice enough to call in and tell me about one that perhaps is a little bit safer, but we've all got it. We've all got a thing. We're all unnerved by something. Hi, Betsy, you're on WGN. What are your fears?
Hi. I have a fear. Actually, it's documented. It's called trypophobia. And it is a fear of holes or like clusters that are all together, like patterns or 3D like clusters.
Okay. And where does that usually manifest in the world?
Well, you see it in different places. Like you could see it underneath like a seashell or something. Like if there's all these like little holes
mm-hmm,
in it
mm-hmm.
or just weird like patterns on... I don't know, on walls or pads, but usually you have to have kind of a 3D thing to it.
Okay.
And it actually has a name. If you look up trypophobia, I've had people look it up and they're like, oh my God, I have this too.
How interesting. I've never heard of that. I've expanded my horizons tonight, Betsy.
Trypophobia. And the other one would be megalophobia, which is a fear of something that's really, really big. Like something like I was in Japan and I saw this giant Buddha. And it was almost like a person shouldn't be that big, but like anything that's kind of amorphous that looks like a big person or a statue.
Sure.
And that's called megalophobia.
I have learned so much.
And I think I have both of those.
All right.
I think Craig said that he had trypophobia.
I do. Like spider eyes. You know how they're all
collected together?
I have.
Just look it up online and you'll see like a bunch of images and you're just going to want to turn off your computer immediately.
They all made me afraid and I almost left the studio, so you know.
By Googling it, I'm going to get very unnerved by this. Well, thanks so much for the call, Betsy. I appreciate the knowledge.
All right.
Have a great night.
Okay, Amy. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. We learned something new tonight. You know, we have our guest with us now, and that is Rex Hupke, our good friend. He is from Guth and Hupke on Politics, and he is from Chicago Tribune, where he is a columnist and writes lots of wonderful things, and we follow his column closely. Rex Hupke, what is it you're afraid of?
I'm afraid of it. I was trying to think of something ridiculous, but I couldn't quite get up with it. I have a fear of cheese or something like that. But I think this fits, although it may not. This may be just more of like a compulsion kind of thing. But ever since I can remember, I'm afraid of pens or pencils if they are pointing towards me.
Oh, so like, I have that too.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I thought it was just me. All right. I feel better already.
No, and straws. It's really uncomfortable in a restaurant if like, because I won't use a straw, but if like the people I'm with, if someone's got a straw pointing at me, I might even like reach up and move it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I don't have to do it. Like, it's not like I'm rendered, useless if I have to deal with it. But it's something that's ever since I was a kid, I can remember that. And if there's like a, especially if the cap is off, you know, if it's a pointed thing that's pointing at me, I like have to like give it a little push and push it out of the way. So it's, I guess I'm afraid of sharp objects pointed at me.
Is it still irrational?
Not that irrational.
Yeah. Is it still irrational if it's a knife? Because like whenever anyone's holding a knife, I'm afraid of that situation.
When people are pointing knives right directly at your face, it creeps
like,
you out.
Chopping something near me, it's just I'm afraid because there's a knife in this situation.
When people are holding knives towards me and asking for my wallet, I find that terrible.
that's where I was. Going
but that's
with
just
that.
You. That's not all of us.
Right. When people are holding me up at knife point. Oh my gosh.
It freaks me out.
Does that have a name, Hupke? The thing, the pointing thing?
I have no idea. Yeah, I've always kept it to myself until just now.
Until you broadcast it.
To the greater Chicago area.
Oh no, it's evening and AM radio reaches across the United States even more and into Canada and Mexico in the evening. So you've just told,
oh yeah, that's a great point.
You've basically just told North America.
Yes. Oh well, it is my dark passenger.
Well, I'm with you on that, but I don't. I'm sure it's got a name, but I'm with you on that. I don't like stuff pointing at me either.
Yeah. Well, good.
Amy, I can't pronounce it, but this is the name of the thing that you're talking about.
What?
Acalophobia.
Oh. You found the pronouncer thing.
I did. I found the thing you talked about.
Acalophobia. How do you spell that?
A-I-C-H-M-O-phobia.
M-O,
wow.
M as in mother?
A-I-C-H-M-O-P-H-O-B-I-A.
Acmophobia.
You're probably right. Acmophobia.
Interesting.
Yeah, Rex, you have acmophobia.
Okay. This is like, you guys have just saved me like tremendous money on a, you know, therapist copay or whatever.
Say. I'll bill you accordingly.
Yes, please do.
Well, lots of things we'll need to perhaps all seek perhaps a little counseling, a little anxiety and stress management for in the coming years, and certainly in the next couple of months as we see the incoming administration, assembling itself, doing those things. It is a habit, right? It is a popular choice that if you're going to put controversial information out into the world, you do so on a holiday weekend or a Friday afternoon when, you know, people are not really following the news so carefully, as was the case this past week. And like Friday, suddenly lots of headlines about Russia and Trump popped up very late in the day.
Indeed.
And I'm making a face that I assume you can see and pick up on. But I was looking around. You know, I go through all the different various publications that I read every day. Every single one of them had a different aspect of all of this, because there are so many pieces to this. It was. There's not one story. There's many. There's a lot of, and I think that's, and it should be that way, because it's a really complex story. Everything that's happening with this kind of this unfolding, or perhaps longstanding, that's now more public, whatever, this relationship between Vladimir Putin and Trump. That's the problem is, and this is a topic we talk about a lot, when a story is very complex and there's a lot of different pieces of it to talk about and they all carry weight, that is, to me, when the opportunity for the spread of misinformation is very high. Because people will take like the one piece, one little tiny thing, and run very far with it. And you're like, okay, yes, that is the thing that happened, but here's the big picture, but here's this detail. Or, you know, like the more details there are, the easier it is to lose other, you know, very pertinent details.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And that is very much on both ideological sides of the fence. You see right-wing news, quote-unquote news sources, or just individuals running with things. You see left-wing places running with things, and oftentimes there is just a massive amount of relevant information and nuance that's missed. And you're right, the Russian stuff right now that we're trying to start to sift through and put together is both confusing and very, very important. I mean, you know, what's happening now is not in any way, shape, or form normal. And I think a lot of it could be, I think we would all feel a lot better about a good amount of it if, for example, Trump would release his tax returns so that we could understand better exactly what connections he has with Russia in terms of financial interests and perhaps money owed, and all that kind of stuff. That would answer a number of very important questions. It wouldn't totally clear the air about what's happening, but it would sure give, I think, a lot of people some, assuming everything was on the level, it would give a lot of people some comfort. And if it wasn't on the level, would certainly be information we'd like to have now, as opposed to, you know, 6 months from now or what have you.
Right. Because another thing that I'm very afraid of is let's say, large scale global warfare. That's a thing. Right. And I feel like as we're entering an era when, and I say that kind of, you know, flippantly and sarcastically, but, you know, so far what we have seen with the president-elect is a lot of communication via Twitter and very little official communication. And, you know, we walked much closer to potentially an international incident a week or two ago with China than I was comfortable with us doing. And, you know, it's a fascinating new administration. Like, that's the headline here, right? It is a fascinating new era, and every leader has got their own communication style, but this is a new one. This is a really, you know, this one is, oh boy.
First of all, Trump is not, after lambasting Hillary Clinton during the campaign when she was on a long stretch of not giving any press conferences, he now has not given a press conference since July, and which coincidentally, that was when he basically asked the Russians to please hack and find Hillary Clinton's missing emails, which, whether that was intended to be flippant or what, still looks really bad right now. And so he is not, he has spoken predominantly, aside from, you know, a few stray interviews, one-on-one interviews, he has spoken predominantly through Twitter or through large rallies. And that's very troubling for anybody who cares about our democracy running the way it should. I mean, if you are not subjected to questions from the media, you are just, it's very Russian.
Well, if you're not being held accountable by people keeping public records and informing the public, you're just going to run roughshod over, you know, and do as you please. I mean, there's this is the fourth estate that we're talking about. The fourth estate needs to do its work. And it's really important to communicate, you know, with news outlets. Also, speaking of, he also met with Kanye, who was really important to meet with. That was the thing that happened. But we're going to take a little break, and we're going to, when we come back, we're going to talk about why on earth Trump and Kanye met today, because that is a real thing that happened. So
a break for extended sighing.
Right. We need to, like, take a breath, do a little bit of yoga for a minute on the commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about why on earth the Kanye West Donald Trump summit happened. I'm not making that up. It's a real thing. Back in just a bit, we'll be talking with, we'll continue our conversation, rather, with Chicago Tribune's Rex Hupke. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. You're just going to rock that out for a minute, aren't you there, Craig? He's like feeling that song.
I turned it down and then it went up.
I don't know what happened. The ghosts of Tribune Tower. That's what happened. That's a real thing. Anyway, we were talking right before the break with our good friend Rex Hupke. He and I do Guth and Hupke on Politics, which you can find at WGNradio.com. We gather every week and we talk about all the political headlines because we are in the new age of political things that just keep on giving is what. And we say that in every single episode, how we just wait a minute. There'll be so many more things. And it's always been that way. But there are especially interesting headlines this go round for sure, such as, Rex, I don't know if you saw this story. I'm sure you did because you're on top of all these things so wonderfully. Kanye West and Trump are, you know, chatting. They're bonding is a thing. That's a real thing. Kanye says that he has a long-term plan. He would like to first meet with him to just talk about life. And then his second meeting, he would like to talk about violence in Chicago, which is a very noble thing to do. I did not see it coming that Kanye was going to go this route. You know, it's also, I mean, he's been doing some weird stuff lately, right? He's clearly in some sort of emotional distress. He's been canceling concerts. He's been in and out of the hospital, yeah, apparently.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like if you and I maybe, you know, if either of us had recently been prone to rants in public and then, say, hospitalized, I don't know that we would have been given access to the president-elect. I'm just throwing that out there, just pointing out an injustice.
There are many things you could throw out here, not the least of which the GOP's sudden love affair with hip-hop, which was not at all present when Barack Obama entertained Common at one point or spoke with Jay-Z, which, you know, caused numerous head explosions on the right. So I found that funny on just an insane number of levels.
Yeah, but you're right. That's very true.
But not for nothing, though. Trump canceled a press conference today in which he was supposed to be discussing his business, you know, how he's going to handle his business potential conflicts of interest, right, et cetera, because he said he was too busy. And yet he's meeting with Kanye and posing with him in the lobby and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, just a lot of crazy optics. And, of course, what we're starting to see, well, not starting, I mean, what's become a trend for months now is that bad headlines on something serious like Russia and their potential interference in the election that just happened. And so then Trump does something to generate other headlines.
Yeah.
Maybe not good, but not, you know, not Russia got me into the White House bad. So along comes Kanye. So, yeah, I mean, and that's going to be the challenge for this whole presidency is going to be not chasing after all the shiny objects. Although even the shiny, I mean, you know, this Kanye thing was, I mean, maybe there's a value to that, too. And look, I'm like, I mean, if Kanye, whatever's going on with him personally, if he's able to get Trump to take violence in Chicago seriously and try to do something about it, then go after it, gentlemen. I mean, great. I would be all in favor of that. I would be highly suspicious of the chances of all that happening. But still, you know, I'm not going to say boo hiss on that by any means. It's just the timing's weird. The optics of it are really weird. I noted in a tweet that I'm not quite sure how well that's going to play over on Stormfront, the racist webpage that supports him so much.
The white supremacy contingent. Yeah, the white supremacy. Super angry about that.
Yeah, right. Anyway.
That is a very good point, though. That is like a pattern we're seeing emerge, right? A very big story emerges, and then something not necessarily flattering, but certainly something attention generating will follow it quickly that will kind of mask it. And it's important that we go, wait a minute, let's not look at this. Let's look at Russia for a minute, because those are some major accusations happening right now. They're flying around, and there's a lot of nuance to that story. And by virtue of the fact that the Russia story is being broken into bits and pieces, makes it hard to parse. But it's also, people are getting, all people are inundated with so much information every day that it's, you know, you really have to very proactively be a consumer of information. You can't just say, this came to me in my Facebook feed. You need to go search other news outlets and make sure you're reading quite a bit about every story to have a well-rounded perspective and to think critically about issues, as I am prone to that rant.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I wish we need to have that printed out and hung on billboards and whatnot, although that would cause accidents because it's a little long, but you know what I mean.
Worst bumper sticker ever.
Yes, we need two bumpers, but that's okay. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's incredibly important. And gosh, I mean, it's only a matter of days now before the Electoral College meets. And, you know, some of this is big stuff, and some of it needs to be sorted out. And I'm not saying that it's, you know, slam dunk conspiracy, something horrible is going on here. Electoral College should intervene and do what it sort of is put there to do. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think that certainly this stuff merits concern.
Certainly. You
know? And it's not, I don't know. Everybody's going to develop fatigue over this stuff.
Oh, I think they already have. And that's why they should all go listen to Guth and Hupke on politics. You can find it at WGNradio.com. And of course, feel free to read everything that Rex Hupke writes at ChicagoTribune.com. Rex, it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Same here.
Same. All right. Talk to you later.
All right. See you.
WGN, Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. I have not heard that song in years.
When I Come Around.
Whoa, I haven't heard that one in a long time.
I realized last night we talked about lyrics that you didn't know what they meant. Green Day, there were a lot of lyrics that I heard as a kid that then I later found out they were singing about something else.
I don't think I could understand many Green Day lyrics.
Basket Case, I knew all the words to that when I was 10.
When you were 10?
Yeah, and I just sang all the words to Basket Case. I didn't know what it meant. Like I think there's drug references and stuff in there. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
I was confused by that, but I knew all the words, which is interesting. And that happens now. My nephew and nieces sing songs, and I'm like, you should never figure out what those mean. That's not.
Well, there's two parts of the lyrics thing, right? There's the singing words that you don't quite grasp the meaning of them yet in your young life. And then there's the misheard lyrics thing, which is super fun.
That I like better.
My mom, do you remember that song, Sowing the Seeds of Love by Tears for Fears?
Mm-hmm.
She thought that was Sowing Machines of Love. And was like singing her little heart out.
Oh, man. Like people together using sewing machines?
I guess.
Yeah, that's nice.
I suppose that's
the sewing machines
of
love. Aw.
I can't think of one. I mean, I do that constantly, but I can't think of one off the
Starbucks
top of my head.
Starbucks Lover is one that I refuse to accept any other lyric than Taylor Swift's Starbucks Lover. It's Star-Crossed Lovers is one of her hit songs that came out over the last year.
Yes.
But it sounds like Starbucks Lover. And that just, to me, sounds like a really beautiful concept. That you maybe fell in love at a Starbucks, you're some form of Starbucks lovers, you know? I don't know, maybe you both went to Starbucks because you had to do work for the next 6 hours and you wanted to sit at a cafe to do it. And then, a little romance happened. I thought it was beautiful, Amy.
Well,
it's a beautiful idea, right?
I guess. Yes, that's lovely.
Right, yeah, okay, yeah. So I refuse.
And this tells, like, this might be a tell as to, like, which of the two of us is the more romantic. I think it's you. Because immediately when you said Starbucks lover, you think of people like falling in love at Starbucks, which is so cute and what I wish I thought of. But instead I was like, that's people that are probably like super strung out on Starbucks and just drink the Starbucks all day long.
Right. Someone who loves Starbucks and loves coffee and is all uppity about coffee. Those people, I don't know. I appreciate a good cup of coffee. But if you explain too much to me, I start to get upset.
To be honest with you, Starbucks is a little, like, it's not my favorite coffee.
What?
Well, it's perfectly fine. It's so strong. I mean, it's like jet fuel, right? It's very, very strong. It's a little bitter. It's not the, you know.
What is your favorite cup of, is it a local coffee? Do you have like a really cool shop you go to?
You know, the fine people at Beautrust Coffee. They do a fine job.
Oh, nice.
I am an espresso or Americano lady, and I make it in my house.
Oh, that's very cool.
And then I just, yeah, done.
And you serve it to others?
I don't have a lot of people coming by for coffee.
For an espresso?
Per se.
That sounds like such a cool thing at a party to offer, though. Like, anyone need an espresso?
I've done that. I've had like little dinner parties and given people espresso after.
That's amazing. I need to do that. I need to add that to my repertoire.
You know, we were talking about...
I just give people popsicles, by the way.
That's a pretty good choice, too.
Right?
I like that choice also. A minute ago, we were talking about when I, with our new shark friend, Chris Bresky, I was talking about when I was in South Africa, and because there's lots of sharks there. Also, I'm going to tie the two things together right now, because there is such a thing as red espresso that I got completely hooked on.
Ooh.
And it is espresso made with rooibos tea.
Oh, rooibos tea is wonderful.
Now, imagine it finely ground and made into an espresso. You put a tiny, teeny, tiny little drop of honey in there, and it is delicious. It is super good. And I was like, that sounds weird. And I'm one of those people, like, if I see something weird on a menu, I'm like, well, it wouldn't be there if it was terrible. Eh, whatever. I'll try it. And I've come across many interesting flavor combinations in my life to varying degrees of success in that way. But that was when I was like, that sounds weird. I'm going to try it. Oh, my gosh. I probably had three more that day.
Can you make it now?
Well, yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, there's a, you can order like a kind of a pod of it or that you can throw into like a Nespresso or a Keurig.
Oh, nice.
Or you can buy it and ground it up.
What are your thoughts of Keurig? Are you a fan? I'm confused. I feel like there's some sort of mystery going on with the little pod cup that goes in and then the coffee comes out.
I like the Nespresso fine.
Okay.
Those are fine, the little pods.
I might have an irrational fear of the Keurig machine.
Is it a fear or is it just a
You're right. Maybe it's just a hesitation. Let's not call it a fear.
That's the thing. We're going to...
I hesitate around the little cup.
I have a rant brewing.
I'm excited.
That is really about exaggerative language and like semantics. It starts with the overuse of the word literally, and it then continues on the path of the things we were talking about earlier, how when people mean particular, sometimes they'll say OCD, even if that's not a thing they have been, you know, clinically diagnosed with having. Or PTSD, when they just mean I'm still stressed out about what just happened. And it continues on this, but exaggerative language is something that drives me crazy. And it shouldn't be, because I joke constantly. I'm always making jokes about things. So it feels counter to everything I do and say. But there's something about I think the word literally did it.
Could we say that you just take people too literally? Could we say that? And that's why you dislike expressive language?
No, I think it's that, although I'm willing to entertain that. I think that it is the overuse and misuse of words that is so rampant that makes me like, you don't even know what you just said. Like when people say, I have literally seen that movie a million times. No, you've seen it enough times that you no longer want to view it. Is what you're really like, just say what you mean. That's my thing, is I just want people to say what they mean.
Yeah.
I'm also a really blunt and straightforward person, and I realize that's very off-putting to a lot of people who know me personally.
It's sort of lovely, though. I got to be honest that being blunt and straightforward, there's so few people that do that. Everyone else speaks in sort of this, you know, sort of protective kind of way.
Yeah.
And it's really great to have people just tell you exactly what
I thank you, because sometimes I think it really is very off-putting to people.
Well, if you had said something to me that was very blunt and then gave me an espresso, I'd be fine.
You'd be fine.
By the way, yeah.
Just recently, I was in a Facebook thread where this kind of came up, because someone said, it started out talking about how do you it was like a quote about, you know, stand up for people who, if someone's talking bad about someone or using hate speech, call it out right there, you know. And so someone said, I believe in this in theory, but how do you actually do it in practice? And it wasn't so much about hate speech at this point in the thread. It had gotten a little more to being about a particular person's bad behavior. Not a particular, but, you know, like if there's someone that you know who's saying something, you know, hateful or something like that. It wasn't like attacking all of a group. It was just like if one person's saying something to you, how do you deal with it? And there were some suggestions in the thread of some wording. And it kind of evolved into if someone's talking smack about another person who's not there. And my contribution to that was, usually I'll start with a joke. I'll be like, whoa there, hater, and just kind of see what they do. And then I'll scoot into the like, oh, come on, man. Like she's going through a rough time, or, you know, she's not here to defend herself or something like that. Unless I hate that person, and then I'll join them. I'm just kidding. And then when I really just, you know, because you don't want someone just standing there griping at you, because
right.
you pick up that kind of negativity. So then the third line of defense, and this is, I feel like a lot of people reacted to this and sent me private messages, was I wrote, and then the third thing you do is you say, you seem really upset about this. Have you talked to her or him or the person you're upset with? Have you talked to them about this? And one or two people commented on that, but so many people sent me a private message and said, I can't believe I didn't even think of that.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I don't think, but it's like, that seems so obvious because I just want to be like, I got to settle this because it's going to gnaw at me until I go settle it. So
no.
I'm just going to go tell you.
So few people bring a problem they have with someone directly to the person they have a problem with. Instead, they complain to other people. And that is a great idea. The next time that someone's complaining, certainly about a situation that maybe you have no knowledge about, when you're hearing this secondhand, the best thing for that person to do is turn around and go talk to the person they're upset with.
Yeah.
That's an amazing suggestion.
Or if you just don't want to hear it, you can just shut it down and be like, you know, because we all know that person that's just constantly complaining about people.
Yeah.
Or just complaining in general. You can be like, wow, this seems like it really bothers you. Have you thought of writing to your senator? Instead of just griping
that's
at the side
idea.
Of my head, you know, it can shut down a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like okay, that. Second PSA. Well, I feel like we kind of did a shark PSA too.
We did. We for sure did a shark PSA and baby animals PSA, by the way.
That was all for you.
And well, that's very, I'm very grateful.
I have no issues with baby animals.
No, there's some baby animals that are just inherently dangerous. A baby bear, that doesn't sound good.
Adorable, though.
Right. Great baseball team, but a baby bear, still scary.
Back in a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Thanks for being with me tonight. That's a good song. I haven't heard that song in a long time. I couldn't remember the name of it. That's why I had to chirp at you right before. I was like, before I turned my mic on, I was like, Craig, what is that? What is that? I haven't heard in a while. It's a good one.
Suffer Well.
Suffer Well. That. Mm-hmm. I knew the word. I was like, suffer,
something.
Torture,
something. Yeah.
It's in there. It's in there. I haven't heard it in a while. It's a good one, though. It's a good one. Well, we have talked about many, many things this evening. That is for sure. But we were just talking with Chris Bresky about this very fun book that he wrote and illustrated called The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. That is like a partridge in a pear tree, but done with sharks. It is super cute. Again, he's offering, if you go to his website, which is the12daysofagreatwhitechristmas.com and enter promo code WGN, this week only, you get $5 off that book, which is a great gift for shark lovers of any ages, as he said. But in that time he was visiting with us, we were talking a little bit about crowdfunding, which is what he did to get, you know, to raise the money to produce this lovely work of art. And I mean that seriously, because it is beautiful. Every page is so pretty. But interestingly, when we think about crowdfunding and the peripheral topics to it, right? Because I think we all know someone who's usually like running a marathon and hitting us all up for cash, you know, doing that kind of stuff. Or you know, there's lots of endurance events that people do, like team and training through the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. They do a lot of these. But you always see like the charity runners at any event, and you see people doing stuff for good causes and like through schools and projects and things like that. But interestingly, did you know that Chicago was extremely generous in 2016? This here city, Chicago, donated more than almost everyone.
Yes.
Did you know that? That's
no.
So fascinating. It's one of the most generous cities in the country when it came to GoFundMe campaigns, which the GoFundMe is a little different than like a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo, something like that, because that's really for a project, a specific thing. A GoFundMe is when, you know, like a tragedy befalls somebody and, you know, a friend or family member will put up a GoFundMe page and say, look, this has happened, you know, so-and-so, you know, lost her husband or their house burned or whatever, you know, like some terrible tragedy has befallen a family. And people will put up a GoFundMe. Well, Chicago ranked number 2 in GoFundMe's list of most generous U.S. cities, being beaten only by New York and coming out ahead of Houston, Los Angeles, and Austin. And Illinois was the 5th most generous state, according to GoFundMe.
That is great news.
Good for us.
Positive Chicago news is wonderful. That's really...
I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm
Way
saying.
To go.
That's great. And, you know, I know sometimes people get a little... what's the word I want? Not jaded. Some of them are like skeptical because sometimes you'll see a GoFundMe and you're like, really?
Really that guy?
Like you don't really. I mean, I legitimately saw one time because this woman said her purse strap broke and she needed a new purse and her purse was expensive. And I was like, well, you know what? I got a bra held together with a safety pin. What's your point? Like, I'm not putting up a GoFundMe. I'm just dealing with it and moving forward. Anyway. So, you know, things like that.
Oh, my God. I hope her purse strap's okay, though. Now that you mention it, I'm worried for her. It's
right.
Scary.
And it's really hard to, you know, think about those kind of things when you're like, okay, but here's someone who is like a firefighter who died in the line of duty.
Right.
And they're doing a GoFundMe for the family, you know, to send his kids to college or whatever, you know.
I think of this year, the Paleta man, the guy who just needed to retire.
Yes, that was a great story.
Mm-hmm.
Bless his little heart. And people... Yeah. The community came through in a big way because he was originally asking for how much?
I think it was only like a few thousand
dollars. It wasn't that
much.
He wanted to like sell the business. And
so I don't even
retire.
Think he set it up. I think that someone in the neighborhood
who saw him
had heard about the family and how he just desperately needed to retire. He went back to work because there were several reasons why. And they just looked for some few thousand dollars. He got $385,000 by the time it was all done.
That's
just
amazing.
To help him retire. Yeah.
Bless him.
How cool.
I know.
And
I
he's
it.
Still selling ice cream, by the way. He refused to stop.
Aw,
I know.
Cute.
Way to go, Paleta man.
That's so sweet. I love it, too, when, you know, when you, especially when you hear about just like such a heartbreaking story, when people just come out of just everywhere and just donate, or like a corporation or something will say, well, you know what, that's the right thing to do. I'm in. I'll do that. Or I'll match it. You know, I see things like that happen a lot, which is very sweet. You know what? Somebody that I know lost her husband right before Thanksgiving, just a couple days before Thanksgiving. He was young. He was 42 years old. And there was, I think within hours, there was a, because they have 2 little kids. And within hours, there was a GoFundMe put up there. And I think there's, you know, I think there's probably a little bit of, probably some pride, you know, some pride stuff. You don't want to necessarily say, okay, I just lost my person and that's half the money and I don't know how am I going to figure this out? You know, you don't need to be thinking about that stuff while you're trying to grieve for your spouse, but nonetheless, like, you know, those practical concerns are going to kick in at some point and you have to. But I think there's probably some, you know, sheepishness and pride attached to that of like, well, I don't.
Oh, certainly.
That would be hard to accept. That would be hard to say yes to that.
I think even when people help you in your own like immediate world before it goes on the internet, before it's a GoFundMe campaign, if something's going on and someone in your, you know, world notices and tries to help you, there's always that hesitation to sort of accept the help first, I think, because...
Yeah, why do we do that?
I don't know. Not wanting to admit that we can't handle it on our own. There's something there where you just don't want to admit that you didn't have it figured out, no matter how difficult it is. And there's a lot of stuff that we need help with, people.
Well, I think even on just a very small level, I mean, I try to ask my friends a lot, like, I know a lot of entrepreneurial people, and so I'm always like, hey, what do you need right now? Because here's the thing that I know for sure, and that is what might be an astronomical challenge to you might be a total cinch to someone else. And I've seen those. I love to put people together that are working on similar things. And so many times I've seen it that it is the case where someone is saying something to me like, I'll say, oh, how's your new business or your film or your book or whatever you're working on? How's that going? And they'll say something like, well, I'm just so terrible about with copy editing. It's just taken me forever because that's so hard for me. And I'm like, really? Because I know someone who loves it and could do it in 2 days and would be thrilled to do it. And you connect those people and suddenly that huge hurdle became nothing. I mean, I'm talking about a real situation in which somebody I know delayed doing anything with a book for a year because copy editing, she was copy editing herself, which is, you shouldn't do that anyway. But it was so stressful to her that she just kept putting it away and kept stalling. And then I was like, oh no, here's my friend who's a great copy editor and loves it.
Oh my God.
She was done in 4 days and she's, this is so fun.
You're like, there's like a matchmaking service there.
You have
an amazing matchmaking service for two people that just need each other for something that's maybe not dating.
Yes.
professional dating situation, not dating. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, there we go.
Beyond that, I think that I feel like I have a moral obligation to introduce those people.
Aw.
If I find out that you're working on project whatever, say you're writing a book about something.
Well, I'm making a movie about myself, you know, so.
Okay, great. You're doing that.
It's going to be a really good movie, by the way. I'm very important.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I just need a good writer to write a movie about my important life.
Yes. Also that. But let's say you're making your autobiographical film.
All right.
And you're complaining to me like, it's going pretty well, but man, I really just hate editing footage.
Yeah.
That's so stressful to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
this is true.
I'd be like, oh, I know a bunch of editors that would have so much fun and make it so good and you would come up with a great product.
Right. The topic of my movie is so good, me, but it's just really hard to edit all the pieces together correctly. That makes a lot of sense. So I would need someone to just cut up. It's hard to take anything out. You know, there's so much great me content in there.
We got to take a break. We'll be back in a minute on 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Hanging with you till 2 o'clock. Craig, I have a question for you. And that is this. Do you believe that when you get sick or versus when your wife gets sick, who do you think is tougher about the flu or something?
Oh, who's tougher about it?
Yeah.
That's a tough question because flu hits me super hard. I get hit very hard by the flu.
Also, is the word tougher a little bit loaded? Because you kind of...
Yeah,
like,
I did. I
leaned
back.
You kicked your chin up like... I'm not tough.
It's impossible for me as a man to admit that I'm not tough. So it would be very hard to say.
Oh, it's
say
possible.
On air.
You just don't want to do it.
Right. Okay. My wife seems to handle the flu better than I do. Let's say it that way.
Well, let me let you behind the curtain of the sisterhood for a minute.
Okay, good.
There is a belief, a lot, and this is according to my own highly anecdotal non-scientific research. This is just people I know knowing what. When together, the things that women are complaining about, it is a common belief, let's say, among the people I know and perhaps I'm connected to on Facebook, that women are a little tougher about the flu. And it usually manifests as complaining about a male partner being a baby, like a giant baby.
I mean, like a giant baby?
Well, but here's the thing. They'd usually be like, you know what? It doesn't necessarily reflect well on women either because sometimes we won't stop and care for ourselves because we'll go like, well, I didn't have time. I got up and I went to work anyway. Like, I mean, for years I used to say, if I don't have fever, I'm going to work anyway, which is terrible. Sometimes you feel like hell.
Yeah.
You just need to rest.
You can get other people sick too. You should stay home.
Right.
Don't go.
Well, fever was always my thing. Like, well, if I don't have fever, I'm not contagious. I'm not fighting infection. Like, whatever. That was always my thing. So I think on the one side, we tend to not care for ourselves when we should.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say there's a lot of women that I know that complain about men not having a very high tolerance for, like, oh, he's such a baby when he just gets the sniffles and he's out of work for a week. Here's the thing. There is now a little bit of data. It's not about being a baby. There's a little bit of data.
Oh, what now?
There's a little. Okay, first of all, there is a term called the man flu.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I've never heard that before.
I get man flu.
Is it just the flu with a dude?
I don't know. It's man flu. It's a rough disease. You get it every so often. It's a wild virus, I guess. It's not a disease. But I get some man flu.
Can a woman get a man flu?
I don't think
flu?
So. I don't think you can get
it's
man flu.
It's just the flu.
Yeah.
A dude that has the flu.
I get man flu. I don't know. I don't want to explain it.
Oh, my
I don't want
Lord.
To get too far in the weeds here.
Anyway, there is some evidence to suggest now, this is all from newscientist.com. There's some reporting that they've done around a recent study that, wait for it, in fact, some viruses might cause weaker symptoms in women than in men.
I'm holding out. I'm waiting for the full sentence to finish. Is that it?
Well, for now.
Boom. I wanted to say boom. Do you get studies every so often that you just save for that argument that might be coming later down the road?
No, I make it right away.
Okay, good. Because there's a video game study that came out sometime that said video games make you a smarter person.
Well,
so I put that in the pocket.
With studies, like, you can skew data to support anything you want it to.
I don't know what you're saying. This
really?
It's now a fact. Video games make you smarter. People should play them. Just every so often, you know.
I don't necessarily dispute that.
Right.
I think if you do it for 12 hours in a row, your brain might get a little mushy. but anyway, this evidence suggests that some viruses might be hitting men a little bit harder.
Right.
The idea behind this is it's bioevolutionary because
yep.
the thought being a virus is more like it's a stronger place to be, right? Because for women, we tend to have like a little bit higher immune system because we're built to at least have the option to have children and all of that and care for them and nurse them and all those things. So our immune system is geared to do all of that stuff. Therefore, because a man's immune system is not necessarily built for that, wired for that, the flu is going to hit him a lot harder. There's interesting, but it goes way beyond the flu because there's some interesting numbers here that are really unfortunate for men. Men infected with tuberculosis are 1.5 times more likely to die than women. Men infected with HPV are 5 times more likely to develop cancer than women. And men infected with Epstein-Barr virus are at least twice as likely to develop Hodgkin's lymphoma as women. That's very serious.
That's, yeah, those all sounded awful.
So I'm going to.
Being a man is terrible.
Oh, my God. I never want to hear that again in my life.
Being a man is the worst.
It's the worst. You make a dollar to the 77 cents that women make.
Right.
It's terrible.
It's awful.
You can walk around any hour of the day without a fear of getting dragged into an alley.
In order to recover from man flu, I need the soup to be in bed with me.
Oh, my God.
That has to happen. I got to get the soup.
Okay, just
to
because
the bed.
There's now some evidence supporting that your immune system is a little more hospitable to viruses doesn't mean you can, like, further the narrative of the
chicken
helpless
soup
baby
in the bed. I can't get out of bed till I've had it.
Okay.
It's just too difficult. And, you know, homemade chicken soup isn't that hard to make.
Here's an unpopular opinion.
Okay, go ahead. I think I'm making a lot of them myself, but you go ahead.
Eating in bed is super gross.
No, it's not, depending on the food product. If crumbs can't be created, you know, then I think it's okay. Breakfast in bed is if you have enough of a, you know, table thing.
If you got like a tray and a nice hotel.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you got to pull the covers all the way up.
Okay. Do you change if you ate something in bed, would you then change all of the sheets afterwards?
I don't know why in the world I would eat anything in bed. Like,
because
just as
it's
a
great
general practice. But like if I, no, I'm trying to think. Like, even if I'm in a hotel and have ordered food, I will pull the cover up to protect the sheets, because what if, you know, like, what if something falls?
They can clean those. You just throw it in the wash, it'll be fine. And
no.
If I'm in the bed and it's like a weekend and I don't want to get out of bed yet, but I'm getting a little hungry, a little peckish, it's great to have the food just come to me.
Oh, you don't even go get your own food?
Well no, I mean, I would be willing to get my own food. That's not, I was thinking more of the hotel concept that you just said.
Okay. I was gonna say, no, some of us live alone and have to do that.
I wasn't ordering another human being that I live with to get me food.
I was going to say, your wife just threw a radio.
Bell. Yeah, right. Yeah, she's waiting for me to come home to punch me in the face.
To set you on fire.
That sounds awful. Would I get food first? That'd be fine. But yeah, if the food comes to you, if you're in a hotel and someone brings it into your room, putting it onto my laying down bed situation is great. That's great. No part of, there's no negative to consuming it without getting out of the bed. Especially when it's cold, by the way. Having breakfast in bed in the winter it's the best. It's the bee's knees.
Okay, part two of this. When you finish eating and you have a dirty dish, do you immediately deal with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to continue to sleep with a dirty dish.
No. We're past the bed thing.
Mean in general?
In general. Do you go, like, set the dish on the counter and deal with it later?
I
Or do you?
I feel compelled to admit something to you now.
All right, let's go.
In college, they had a nickname for what I did. I was a one-pot system guy. And the one pot was you cooked in it, you ate out of it, you let it soak, and then you cleaned it when you were ready to cook again. So it was a one-pot, eat, put it in the sink, don't necessarily clean it at that moment, but when I'm ready to cook the next meal, clean the pot, eat out of it, put it back in the sink.
So, I mean, it's efficient.
Yeah, see, there were no other dishes to do. I had one dirty, to an extent, pot that had been rinsed out and was sitting in the sink pretty much every day. That was then going to be cooked in and consumed out of the next day. It was Craig's one-pot system, and it's a really good, anyone in college, if you need a way to cut down on your dishwashing situation, try the one-pot system. You gotta wait for it to cool. There was sort of a negative to, you know, if the pot was too hot.
Well, what about the scenarios in which you were cooking something that needed two pans?
I don't know what you're talking about. You just put everything in the one pan. I mean, chicken with pasta, like it just all goes in there and then it cooks until...
Well, okay, pasta is a good example.
Yeah.
So how would you... So say you're going to make chicken and pasta.
Right.
You got to sear that chicken.
No, you don't have to do that.
You got to... That will not be delicious.
So you put oil in the pot,
yeah,
and then you start to cook the chicken.
Okay.
And then you kind of dump the oil out a little bit, I guess, but then you fill with water and then you boil the pasta and the chicken's still kind of cooking because, you know, boiled chicken, that's fine. And then once it's done, you drain that out and then you eat the...
I got to back up to boiled chicken. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's some people chicken. You boil the water and then you throw the chicken in and that's a meal. Right?
Oh, my God.
So then you put the sauce in the pot after you've drained the water, and then you consume out of the pot, and then you rinse and you leave it in the sink. That's Craig's one-pot system, trademark.
I'm not going to dispute the, like, eat out of the pot, that's fine.
Okay, cool.
That's fine. I'm not going to dispute that.
Your problem is the idea that my meals were not complex enough to demand a second pot.
No, it's that when they were, you modified them. Made them cruddy,
yeah.
So that you could maintain the. If you boiled chicken
after you sort of cooked it with some oil in the pot,
okay, that maybe
I put oil in the pot. I cooked the chicken a little bit, then I boiled and added the pasta. That's how I made chicken and pasta.
I'm just gonna throw it out there that it might be more delicious if you had like a saute pan.
Oh, I'm sure,
or a roasting pan.
Sure,
to roast that chicken while dealing with the pasta. But then did you have like a little sauce situation to make
you just
pasta
dump a little,
sauce?
Right. Well, no, you don't make. You just buy that at the store.
Oh,
get a little
God.
Ragu, pour it on top.
I take it for granted how much I cook.
All right, yeah.
And how much I enjoy doing so, because I hear these stories and I'm like, no.
You were raised cooking very fancy stuff though, right? You're very fancy in the cooking world.
Chef on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because my dad was like, you're going to need a day job for this here, whatever field you're getting into involving writing and radios and whatever. So he was in the restaurant field, and I worked for him for a very long time.
I sort of viewed food as just a thing I needed, not necessarily a thing that I would enjoy. It's just something I needed to put inside me to keep living.
Apparently, if you boiled a chicken, we're going to take a break. And we're going to go to news here in just a little bit. Back with more culinary lessons for our esteemed producer, Craig, in a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. Hanging out. It is... quite lovely looking out on the Michigan Avenue from the Michigan Avenue studio. It is so lovely outside, but boy, is it cold out there. I hope you are bundled up and warm and cozy. It is very beautiful. It is a winter wonderland, but it is darn cold. And the wind chill is quite cold too. When we are going to keep the weather reports coming for you.
Oh my God. And this job, it's so funny when that starts happening, when all the reports are single degrees,
mm-hmm.
It's 8 here. It's 6 here.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
You feel that, like,
yeah,
in your bones when it's like, and a high of 2. You're like, that's not on.
Today's high is 11.
Yeah.
That's not a thing.
Oh, it's rough. It's rough. And, okay, I lied. Here's another PSA I have for you. There is a tendency on social media when somebody posts a video, or I'm sorry, a photo of being in a warm and beautiful place, to say very mean things to that person. I make a point to say, like, hey, that's so great that you're able to soak up some sunshine. A little part of me is like, I wish that I too was whatever exotic place you're at. That would be great. But also, like, can we not begrudge each other sunshine?
I like that.
Like, we are at a bad low if we're mean to each other over experiencing sunshine and warmth. We're in a bad place.
It's funny, though, the exact way that you said that you congratulate someone online is like, enjoy your sunshine. I type that too, but I don't mean it the way you just said it.
You mean it
like enjoy your sunshine.
Suck it. Yeah. You mean it meanly.
Have a great time in the sun.
Well, because that's because you're a bad person.
It is.
I'm kidding. You're not. You're a delightful person.
I really, get very jealous very quickly of weather people. I want to live in a great climate at some point, right?
Like, we do. We have all four seasons.
Oh.
We live in a fine climate.
No, you do. I like winter for Christmas. If it immediately ended on January 1st, though, that would be wonderful.
February's a tough one here.
Yeah.
That's when it's... My parents used to live in Florida, and that was when I would like, I need to come visit you. Because I'm like, I can't do it. I have to go over
for something.
Totally changing the subject.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about Harry Potter for a minute. And the reason I would like to do so is because there is a really interesting little tidbit floating around the interwebs at the moment. And that is all about how that is one book that, even though print books, like physical books, has declined a bit since the Kindle came out and all that, that is one book that has stayed steady for the long haul. That is a book that people keep going to. New readers keep getting introduced to it. They're lovely, like all the Harry Potter books. I've read them.
It's sort of amazing. It's been a long time since a new Harry Potter book came out. And this year, the best-selling book is Harry Potter. 4.18 million copies have been sold of
Isn't
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Yeah. And then the next closest book for year-to-date sales is The Girl on the Train with 1.2 million. So...
Wait, 4-point-something versus...
4.18 million is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. And then The Girl on the Train, number two most best-selling book this year, 1.2 million. Behind that, Killing the Rising Sun, 0.77 million. So not even a full, 770,000.
That's a significant jump between 4.18 million and 1.2 million.
Yeah, and again, I know that Harry Potter is super popular, but it's been a while since a book came out. So it's interesting that it still has that level of excitement, that level of,
Well, so J.K. Rowling made Pottermore, that very cool site, which is beautiful. It is a beautiful website. If you haven't ever been to it, please go to Pottermore. It's very, very pretty. And you can sign up, and I think there's a premium area. If you wanted to pay, you can get extra stuff. But essentially, you're reading little extra details. But it's very realistic looking. It's beautifully done. And it's as if you're wandering these streets and you kind of can go into a little shop and read a little something there, or you come across a person and click on them and read a little something. I think that's probably helped prop up Harry Potter sales quite a bit, having that. But then also Universal Studios has that Harry Potter land, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and then they just opened the new part of it.
Well, and there's already a rumor that this is a movie very, very soon, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. That's already going to be a thing.
Well, the movies are lovely, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, as soon as she writes a book, it's, okay, this is immediately a movie. There's going to be a ride, like you said.
People go all crazy. I went to the Harry Potter thing at Universal.
Okay.
I was down there, and I was like,
How big of a Harry Potter fan are you? Like, can you recite a spell?
No.
Okay.
No, but when I see Harry Potter tattoos on people, I know what it's from.
Immediate respect.
Yeah.
Got it. My brother-in-law can recite spells. There's spells every so often that's a Harry Potter spell. I'm like, okay, great.
That's impressive enough.
I know, right?
I like that.
I don't even know how many are used in the book. They use a lot.
A lot.
Okay.
A lot of them.
All right.
But then I've never really tried to memorize one.
I'm sure you could.
On account of them being fictional spells.
They don't do stuff?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't tried them. If I felt like it was going to be a thing that would make a person's face freeze and they'd stop talking, or, many of the... Because there's that one. There's the freeze people. There's the invisible. There's all this stuff.
The hat flies.
Yeah, all those.
Right.
If I
made mine up. I don't know if it's a thing.
There's the sorting hat.
Okay.
Decides if you're in Gryffindor or whatever.
Got it. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Good.
Who's I'm glad. The Potter fan? Yeah.
It's amazing that book sales, like you said, are declining so much. And yet Harry Potter, for some reason, this is consumed as a physical book, too. It's just not... People don't do it on Kindle as much. I'm sure they do,
now,
but...
this is interesting, though, because it's a little bit of a flip-flop, because when the Kindle first came out, there were a lot of people, a lot of adults, before all this branding was around Harry Potter, and it was a thing that any age person could read in public without ridicule. the first couple books were very much positioned like children's books. And so there was a lot of adults that were buying Kindles specifically so that they could put the Harry Potter books on them. Not only were they marketed, or was the perception that they were marketed to children, but they were also, they're very heavy. They're big books. And so people were like, you know, I didn't really want to get that Kindle thing, but I'm going to do it because that beats, you know, carrying around five of these giant books the size of a phone book. They're really, I mean, some of them are really big. So interestingly, Harry Potter helped kind of spark a lot of early e-reader sales. But now that's kind of flip-flopped. And now it's people are in on the physical book there.
It's like vinyl? Is it coming? Do people feel like having a physical book is like having a vinyl record?
I've wondered about that because I've long said that the literary publishing industry should always look to their colleagues in the music industry, because the disruptions hit music about 2 years before they hit literary publishing. And so we've seen that happen with music. Like you download it or you stream it. I don't think many people download anymore. You just stream something. But then, like, to have the vinyl is kind of special and sexy, and there's some, you know, cachet to doing that. So I think so. And a few years ago, it seemed like there were some books that were having an edition that would come out that would be, you know, a hardback edition that was, like, embossed with metallic paint on the cover, and it was very beautiful. And the publishers would only make a couple hundred of those, and then the rest would be, you know, paperback or predominantly digital, which I think is really interesting.
I want to get an embossed copy of something.
I know.
That was really nice.
I know. And that'd be super cool.
Put it on my bookshelf.
So I think, I don't think we're done, right? I think there's a lot more to do.
And if J.K. Rowling keeps writing stuff, the book industry will survive until it comes back and thrives again for everyone else.
I super love that story, too, about how she, and I don't know if it's real or not, but it's just one that circulates about her a lot. And that is how she, when she sold that first book, she was down to just her last, I don't know the amount, but it was a scary amount. I think it was like $20 or something. She was super broke and she really didn't know what was about to happen, and it worked out. And I love that she was just like, no, I know I have this. I know that I do. I don't know how I'm going to figure it out with only $20 to my name or however much it was, but I'm going to do this.
You guys are going to love it. It's been 19 years. And it's the eighth book in the franchise, just to let you guys know.
19 years?
19
gosh.
Years.
Time flies.
I know.
I'm one of those people that still feels like the 90s were like 10 years ago.
They should be.
I'm all like, like I hear a song, be like, oh, I hadn't heard that in like a decade. No.
Two.
It is 2016.
Holy God. It's almost 2017.
Yeah, almost.
I know. I'm amazed I made it, to be honest.
Why? What do you mean?
No, I just, you know, there's something where you think to yourself like that sounds so far away. 2016, oh. 2017.
Oh, I thought you meant like...
No, I didn't have an illness.
I thought you were saying like you wanted to off yourself or had an illness or something.
No. This is the trust-free where I talk about that. So no. It's just that sounds, these years that we're getting into sound futuristic. I mean,
I remember when I was a kid, the idea of year 2000 was like the Jetsons to me.
Yeah, maybe the best way to explain it is 2015 was in Back to the Future. That was the year that they went to in Back to the Future. To me, that sounded really far away.
Nope.
And now apparently it's behind us. Yeah.
Not really apparently. No, for real. It's not apparently, but it's definitely. It's pretty roundly documented that it's behind us.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Yeah.
Thank you for updating me.
Bless your heart. Okay. So after I get you to stop boiling chicken and learn how to cook it, I'm going to teach you how to read a calendar.
Okay.
It's going to be good.
I've learned a lot tonight.
Bless your heart.
Can I get that shark back?
Yes, it's right here.
Oh, no, wonderful.
It's right here. We're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez. With you a little bit longer till 2 o'clock when we turn things over to Nick DiGilio. And Patty is not back tomorrow. Who's in tomorrow? It is not me.
Jen Bosworth.
The great Jen Bosworth.
The amazing Jen Bosworth.
She is a delightful person. You will be delighted and entertained with her at the wheel. She's super fun and super, super funny. And she does a one-woman show.
Oh my God. She's amazingly talented, super busy.
Yeah.
So
I went and saw her show. It was recently at Catalyst Ranch in the West Loop, and it was very funny. It was, and she, when she originally told me about it, she pitched it like, she goes, well, it's about how my dad died and then my mom died and, you know, cancer and hospice, but it's really funny. And I was like, Jen, I think you might want to tweak that.
Jen, it sounds like it's
elevators, little pitch a little bit. And then she did. And, you know, she's got her, her way of describing it. And it's, and she brings in so many elements. Like when she was in LA, she worked for a celebrity, and very funny stories about him. And oh my gosh, it's really good.
Oh my God. Her Nick Cage stories are all incredible.
Hilarious. Yeah. The way she got hired to work for him was so funny. This thing with like a trailer in a desert. And he just said, oh, you worked at a church. And that was it. That's the only thing he said to her. Super funny.
Mm-hmm. She's
great,
amazing.
Great storyteller. I have a feeling that show will pop up again sometime very soon. And if it does, please go see it. It's called Why Me. It's super, super funny.
You know, I mentioned to you off the air, we had some more texts of things that people are irrationally afraid of.
Oh, tell me.
And if you want some of
those.
That's
how we opened the show, talking about things we were irrationally afraid of, because I confessed that space heaters scare the crap out of me because I assume they're going to burn my house down.
Yeah, and I'm afraid of sinkholes.
Because my house burned when I was a kid, but it did not burn as a result of a space heater. It burned as a result of the fireplace.
And you are afraid of fireplaces?
No, fireplaces are great and cozy and wonderful.
Still confused.
I'm not saying
and
it
you're not
makes
afraid
a
of baby sharks.
Sense.
This is all stuff from earlier in the show.
I petted one. It's fine.
From the 224, I'm afraid of mosquitoes. I don't know if that's irrational or not, just to be afraid of mosquitoes.
Well, like Zika and,
yeah,
you know, there's lots of bloodborne pathogens that those little turkeys can carry. So that's a reasonable one.
From the 815, I'm terrified of space heaters, too.
Thank
My
you.
First 10 years, we lived in a century-old farmhouse.
Oof.
My sister and I shared a room on the second floor. The attic
Sounding
was the
cold.
Next room over, very
Sounding
cold.
Cold. Yep.
Mom ran a kerosene heater in there. I spent
Stressing
many
me out.
Long nights staring at it, wondering if it was going to catch fire.
Yeah,
there
I
you
totally
go.
Feel you. What area code was that from?
That's the 815.
815, I'm feeling you.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have slept either. I would have stayed awake looking at it.
From the 312, I do not have an irrational fear of clowns. In fact, clowns are awesome. They just wanted us
See,
to know.
That's proving my point, that mm-hmm. people are, many people are socialized to believe they have clown hatred when, like, stop and decide for yourself. I'm not defending clowns. Like, I don't have anything against clowns.
They come in all different shapes and sizes, too. So there's, you know.
Sure.
There's some that could
I think
be scary.
The de facto thing is to say, oh, I'm super freaked out by clowns. Some people legitimately are. But, like, just stop and check yourself. Because I think we're in this habit of just saying things we don't really mean.
We don't all mean them. From the 815, I fear this weekend snow forecast.
Well, that's
that makes sense. I think that very much makes sense. From the 708, I'm morbidly afraid of heights. Yet I absolutely am addicted to rappelling and skydiving. That makes you, this makes no sense.
No, that's really interesting.
Right.
I find that really compelling. So I had no issue with heights until I was in my early 30s. And one day I was on a plane and I looked out the window and I thought my heart was going to fall out of my chest. It was out of nowhere terrifying to me. And then just in the last couple of years, I've been really actively working on getting over that.
Do you fly a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid of takeoff and landing, but I don't know if that's irrational. That's the scariest point, right? Once you're in the air, you're safe. The takeoff can go bad. The landing can go bad.
I think it can all go bad. Don't you watch TV movies?
Don't say this to me. I'm going to have more fears. From the 630, my fear is of leaving my left arm hanging off the side of the bed.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I fear leaving my arm hanging off the side of the bed at bedtime.
Like the boogeyman's going to get it?
Yeah, like someone's going to get it from... And they also look under the bed at night, apparently, still. So that makes sense.
Hey, whatever makes you feel more secure, do it.
From the 224, putting my face in water terrifies me.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I don't know why. Even with eyes closed and nose pinched, it's still terrifying that I'll drown. I mean, in any amount of water, like if you scoop it in your hands and splash it in your face?
I don't know. Maybe not, or maybe. I mean, who knows? It might just be, you know, one of those things like, well, my eyes will be closed. I won't be breathing. I literally have no control. And this very simple thing has
done.
The ability to kill you, you know?
Like, I mean, not the amount of water you'd put in your hands.
No.
You couldn't drown in that amount of water.
No, but if you, you know, if I think it's fair to say, like, okay, well, I can't be breathing in this, and I'm not
right.
going to be opening my eyes. I'm completely surrendering to this.
I realize now that I'm being very judgy of the fears people are texting in, and you're being overwhelmingly kind about them.
Well, I'm trying to be lovey about it because, you know, no one was overtly mean to me about the space heater.
No, it's totally fine, and it makes sense. From the 608, I'm afraid of the phobias that fears, like the word phobias. The words of phobias are fear enough. That's what it says from the 608.
Okay.
I said that poorly. They're just afraid of phobia terms.
Okay.
From the 608, the ugly face of politics is what I'm afraid of.
Oof.
That was very political. It was very specific.
Well, that's true.
Now, from the 773, I love the show. I'm not afraid of it.
Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you.
Thank
Who's
you for that,
770?
Guys. 773.
773. Thank you, 773. I appreciate that very much.
I'm trying to see if there are any more here. I think then we got off topic a little bit to other things. They said they love you and Rex. Text we didn't get to.
Oh, thank you.
I love you guys. You make a great journalism team.
Aw, thank you. That's super nice. He's so funny. That guy's a hoot.
From the 317, rational fear, not investing $30 to save your life.
Wait, what does that mean?
Your guest family living with you, neighbors, buy a smoke/carbon monoxide detector. It took us a little bit to get there, 317, but okay. I appreciate that. Make sure you have a smoke detector in your house.
I've got them.
Spend the $30.
I don't need to. They're there. I got them.
And then another one from the 606, I'm afraid of sharks. But that was on topic.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that 606 person was probably really uncomfortable during the shark segment.
Thank you for listening to the three shark segments we did.
Aw, I'm sorry, shark person.
They were baby
upsetting.
Sharks. They're fine.
But I promise you, if you're feeling it, to the person that sent that text, if you're feeling it, the shark book is really cute. They're not mean sharks. It's really cute. It's definitely appropriate for children. It's very, very cute. It's called The 12 Days of a Great White Christmas. And it's sharks acting out Christmas stuff. I like the tiger sharks one. That's on day two. And they're like trying to put a tree up and botching it. Because they're sharks and they have flippers, not hands. And so one of them is like tangled in the tree. One's on a ladder trying to do something. Oh my gosh. So cute. Mm-hmm. Super cute.
Just as funny as when anyone does a Tyrannosaurus Rex trying to do anything with their
hands. There is a book. I meant to bring this up on the air. There is a book called, it's very similar, but it's about, I think it's called Do Dinosaurs Celebrate Hanukkah? And it's the same thing. It's like dinosaurs. It's eight dinosaurs on the eight nights of Hanukkah doing things. One's like, do dinosaurs help you wrap presents or make latkes or spin dreidels? And it's like a T-Rex trying to do something like wrap a gift with his tiny little T-Rex arms. But it's beautifully illustrated. It's so cute. I feel like that would be a good companion to the sharks and Christmas.
By the way, one more text from the 317. They loved all the PSAs tonight. That's Larry in Indianapolis.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Full of PSAs. Mm-hmm. I don't want to call them rants. I just sometimes feel like I need to go do PSAs for all the things.
Oh, and we just got a text from 304. My daughter is afraid of clowns, so I get the movie It. I don't understand the rest of that. 313.
The movie It.
Oh.
Yeah, that movie, that it was based on the Stephen King's book It. It had a clown in it that was very scary. I mean, I might give it to her. Like, I'm no question that was a scary clown.
I haven't seen this. I gotta get this on my radar.
Yeah. I would say read the book first.
Okay.
Read the book first and then see the movie.
And this is going to make me be afraid of clowns then.
It'll make you understand that it is perfectly valid to be, but I don't think that you'll be afraid of, you might be afraid of that one in particular. That's all I'm saying.
It's good to know.
Keeping it in perspective.
I'm very excited about this.
What?
Should I watch this movie when I go home tonight? Is this a bad before you go to sleep
movie?
It
will scare the crap out of you.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. But I love horror movies, so I often go home and watch horror movies.
Right.
So.
I was really scared as a kid of Ernest Scared Stupid. That gives you a perspective of what would...
So then, no, you should not watch It when you get home tonight at 2 or 3 in the morning. You should definitely not do that. You should just boil chicken as you do.
And put the pasta in and eat it out of the pot. Yeah,
oh my
sure.
God. I'm going to teach you how to cook.
That sounds great. I mean, I can't wait. It's one pot cooking though, right? It's a one pot system that you do?
No.
Okay.
But I'm going to challenge myself to see.
Two pots?
Craig, I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes you use like four or five.
That makes no sense.
Sometimes I'll.
That's incredible.
Put one pan to roast something in the oven and have all four burners going for sauces and things and side dishes.
You can't cook things inside the oven while you're cooking things on top.
It's quite efficient to do so.
It's a law.
I promise you.
No, I'm pretty sure you can't use both at the same time.
I'm going to expand your horizons. And you will eat better and you will be glad that your horizons were expanded.
If something's simmering on the top of the rest of the stove doesn't work.
That's not even a thing. Not even a thing. In fact, it probably works more efficiently because the whole thing's warm.
No, I don't know.
It warms up your apartment and you don't have to use a space heater.
Oh, boom! Hey! Boom!
Callback.
Right. That was amazing.
On that
This was an incredible show.
This was fun. Always a pleasure to hang out with you. All right, we're going to take a break, turn things over to news, and then turn things over to our good friend Nick DiGilio. Back in a bit on 720 WGN.
President-elect Donald Trump continued his thank you tour with a stop outside Milwaukee Tuesday night. WGN's Ryan Burrows there.
President-elect Donald Trump was a 22,000-vote winner in Wisconsin, but there are still some wounds that need healing here in the Dairy State, especially between House Speaker Paul Ryan and Wisconsin Trump supporters.
I don't like Paul Ryan one bit. I don't like him one bit. I think he's a total sellout.